On this episode of the Fear Meow podcast, Justine Hamilton and I have the pleasure of interviewing Ben Annapol and Or Kalan. Both of these gentlemen are from Israel, and they've come on my show to do the second installment of the Fear Meow podcast centering on anti-Semitism and the stuff that's happening in the Middle East. So I am really pleased that both Or and Ben have decided to come on the show, and really appreciate their opinions. Hope you enjoy the show. There are two basic motivating forces, fear and love. When we're afraid, we pull back from life. When we're in love, we open up to all that life has to offer with passion, excitement, and acceptance.
Coming to you from our studio in Santa Barbara, California, this is the Fear Me Out podcast. We're not your typical self-help program. Our show takes a deep dive into those psychological issues that affect us on a daily basis. We hope to shift your perspective and have you experiencing emotions differently. Now, Dr. Dana Saperstein.
Welcome to the Fear Me Out podcast. Justine and I are really excited about the interview today, but I'm going to let Justine do the introductions because she brought these two amazing men onto the podcast. So, Justine, tell us a bit about the guests that you have chosen and what we're going to talk about today.
Hi, everyone. It's Justine. We're here to talk to my friends, Ben and Or. It'll be interesting to see how this podcast goes because it's a bit of a emotional topic and a very relevant topic today. We're going to talk about what's happening in this world and happening in the rest of the world in terms of anti-Semitism and the conflict and where we are. And Ben and Or are here to talk about their personal accounts around some of this. So let me just give you a little brief intro. Ben is very smart. Ben Annapol, he's 33, born in New York, and lives here in Santa Barbara. He is a Reformed Jew. He received his BS in chemical and biomedical molecular engineering at Cornell and his MBA from Pepperdine. He is now the director of operations and supply chain for an aerospace and defense company, working on technologies in missile defense and thermal management systems used in radar and electronic warfare. So he's done a bit of schooling in his time. Or is 35. He was born in Hedera, Israel, lived there for his early life, now also lives here with Santa Barbara. He also is a Reformed Jew. He's a world-renowned ballet dancer and the former soloist of the Royal Ballet of Spain and the Netherlands. He was the winner of the first season of So You Think You Can Dance in Israel, and now he's leveraging his background in ballet and Pilates and has created his own unique flow-based choreography focused on technique and movement and has been training celebrity clients and other clients globally over the last 15 years and owns the best Pilates studio in Santa Barbara. So anyone that's out there that's local, you need to come take Or's class. Trust me, it's difficult. So they're here and they are going to share some of their experiences with us, and we're all looking forward to the conversation. I know probably the least about this because I'm the only non-Jewish person in the room. So I am here to ask some questions and also learn and understand better for myself because you can't trust anything these days. So there we are.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you.
So which one would you like to start by giving us a description of what your life has been like up to this point and why you're here?
Yeah, sure. I can take the lead. So this is Ben. I was born in New York, in New York City. I lived there for about 2 years, and then I moved out to the east end of Long Island, to the Hamptons community. And I grew up there throughout my early childhood and middle school and into the early teenage years. And it was actually a very interesting community to grow up in because it was so isolated. There was really not a lot of diversity in the community. It was mostly a Christian community. I only had, I think, one other Jewish student in my grade and probably about a dozen Jewish students, in my age range in the community. So, not a lot of people that I could relate to in terms of Judaism growing up. But there was an Orthodox synagogue in town. A lot of that was for the influx of summer residents come in from New York City out to the Hamptons in the summer. So we had a beautiful, you know, synagogue. I grew up, you know, being taught in Orthodox methodology of Judaism. I went to Hebrew school. Every 2 weeks, it was very important for myself and for my family to keep our faith because of how few Jews there were in that community. So it was a very tight-knit community. I had a great education, both in schooling and in Judaism through Hebrew school. It felt like a very supportive community. And I felt like because we were so small and isolated, we weren't really on the radar, you know, of, you know, any sort of hatred. You know, I didn't feel like I necessarily was exposed to anti-Semitism as a young child growing up. But at the same time, I felt like there weren't so many people like me or mm-hmm. like my background in the community. So, you know, not so much diversity of thought in that respect.
That's interesting that you didn't feel any anti-Semitism, being that you were such a minority. And, you know, that's probably what was happening at the time. That's great. I wonder why that was.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was because it wasn't spoken about, I guess, religion. You know, it was like people didn't even really understand what Judaism was. Maybe it was just a lack of even awareness of mm-hmm. this very small religion. You know, I think it started to come up when we got to like bar mitzvah age and, you know, we invited our friends to bar mitzvah. People didn't even know what that was.
Right.
So I think it was just honestly a lack of awareness yeah. of like, what is Judaism? What is a different religion? Right. It was like, you know, Christianity was the main religion of people in the community. So it just wasn't a topic, you know, necessarily.
Did you study the Holocaust in school, and did your classmates have any reaction to you about that?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm trying to remember like when, what grade we studied the Holocaust. It was probably in high school. I think so. After middle school, I ended up moving to New York City, which was a much more, you know, diverse community. I actually went to a private school called Trinity, which is an Episcopalian school. Mm. However, it is very, you know, highly regarded for its academics. So there were quite a few more Jewish students in that community. And I think that would have been the place probably at that age where the Holocaust was brought up. And I think once I was in New York City with a more diverse, you know, community group, there was more awareness and more discussion about, you know, different religions. Mm-hmm. And different cultures and differences between people. And I think, you know, there was definitely Holocaust awareness and people were educated and more supportive. And to be honest, like even through high school, I never felt like I was the victim of anti-Semitism. You know, I think there's something different going on right now and we'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, from 1990 to 2008, I didn't feel like there was anti-Semitism around me necessarily directly to me. I know it can be present throughout cultures and it depends who you interact with. But I think I didn't have any personal, you know, bouts with anti-Semitism. And I think, you know, also the presence of social media now, right? We didn't have that same access to virtual information from, you know, varying sources, whether they're, you know, truthful sources or propaganda sources. But I would say there was less information maybe right. being spread. And I think social media is a lot of the reason why there's more anti-Semitism today. And that didn't exist, you know, early yeah. on. So
even the papers then, they were more neutral than they yeah. are today. So yeah. you could see really what the story was in both sides to it.
So Ben, where were your parents and grandparents from?
Yeah. So my parents were born in America. Okay. My grandparents were also lucky enough to be born in America, but my great grandparents were the ones that emigrated, you know, during the Holocaust times from, you know, I'm mostly actually Ukrainian descent. So another kind of war torn country right now. Also I have some Russian blood, Polish, a little bit of British. So I'm kind of a mix of, you know, different European backgrounds, but 100% Ashkenazi Jew.
Okay. And did they describe, difficulties that they encountered in their young life?
I think it was almost like, I guess I wasn't exposed. It was like kind of a naivety of blindness.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't something that was focused on, you know, in my childhood. You know, maybe it was my parents trying to shield me.
Right.
But I felt like I was in a very isolated community. It was always like, you know, you're Jewish. There's not a lot of Jewish people here. But I didn't feel like that there was any hatred towards me or any, you know, bias against my religion from my peers.
Right.
Yeah.
And remind us how old you are?
Right now I'm 33.
Okay, so you're sort of my kid's age. I don't think they experienced any anti-Semitism growing up in Santa Barbara. At least they didn't ever, you know, say anything about that. But certainly my parents chose to live in neighborhoods only surrounded by Jewish people because of what they went through. So,
yeah. And I think a lot's changed, you know, because I didn't feel like I needed to be an advocate for anything related to Judaism until, you know, 2 months ago. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think everything has totally changed now.
Right. Okay. And do you experience anything? Well, we'll get to current a little bit later in the podcast. So how about you, Ark? Can you tell us a bit about, because you were born in Israel.
Right.
Which part of Israel?
Hadera. It's in the north. So it's basically 40 minutes from Tel Aviv.
Okay.
It's a beach town. And I grew up with a very loving, caring, supportive family. I am one of three boys. I'm in the middle. And my story, it's a bit different because in Israel, we are always with our hand on the heart to check the beat. You know, we don't know what the tomorrow will bring.
Right.
So for me to talk about anti-Semitism is basically to ask me if I felt hate towards me and my country. Yes. From day one. Always.
Yeah.
There is always the conflict that we try to solve or figure it out. I am being in an art school since I was 15. So it's also a very protected community. It's a very small bubble that we don't really feel anything outside of the world except of the art that you are doing and focusing on. And when I left Israel when I was 18, I never felt anti-Semitism because I think it's because of the level of my talent. I got only respect. I felt proud to say that I'm from Israel, that I'm Jewish. I felt proud to be the only Israeli in the Royal Ballet of Spain and the soloist. I felt proud to be the only Israeli in the Netherlands Dance Theater and the soloist. We always shine. We're always different. Kind of like because we also have to. So I did not feel any hate because my talent was my protective shield. But now, what I'm experiencing, it's a whole new world for me. It's like taking me back to your era. 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 40 years ago. It's a new information for me to digest, even though that I am trying to hold my emotions. It's very hard. Every day, we speak about the Holocaust all the time, and we... Sorry, it's just a very hard transition for me. It's something that we talk about all the time. You know, Israelis, when they're 9 years old, you feel like you speak to a 25 years old because we experience so much emotionally. And the information that as a child I needed to digest, but also see and experience, it forced you to be an adult at a very young age. Yeah. So I lived in Spain, I lived in Holland, and I did not feel it. Now I'm feeling it. And I am very ashamed and afraid. And I'm also ashamed of the gay community that I'm part of. That I'm seeing them pro-Palestine all over with social media, with their purple hair, walking around and thinking that we have all the knowledge in the world and what we see now, that's the fashion on TikTok, so that's what we believe in. We're going to go to the street and we're going to say pro-Palestine. It's kind of like a salad bowl for me. It's hard for me to focus on one thing because the hate is focused only toward Jews. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did not experience it myself, but my country did.
And you have family that still lives in Israel.
My family is in Israel.
And what did they tell you about what it's like to live there right now?
You would be surprised that they feel that this is the one place right now that it's safe for Jews to be.
Oh, okay.
Of course they are sad. Of course they are angry. My country is bleeding. We've been through so much. The Holocaust. And not just the Holocaust. Every year there is something big that's happening. A terror attack or hate crimes. Every year. Every day, every month. a bus explode, a pregnant woman that have a belt of bomb under her dress that getting into the mall and explode just to kill as many Jews that she can, because that's the mission, that's the blessing. So we feel it in Israel every day, but what's hard now is to explain why we are just protecting ourselves, we're just reacting. My big question is to you, the viewers, and to the world, is why? Do you even know why you hate us? Explain me exactly why you don't like us and why it's okay in your eyes to hurt us. So that's where I am right now. And living in America, it feels scary. We just came back from New York. And New York, it's a, sorry my language, it's a shit show. It feels like that they lost control. And they did. And Europe lost control. Europe is a lost cause. They lost it.
In terms of the marches or?
The marches, the amount of Arabs that there is there. Now, not all the Arabs have the same intentions, but 88% of them are. And that's rooted to their babies from day one. So me and Ben grew up with love and care and learn how to respect and work hard, achieve, be good, do good, be a good purpose, be a good person. That's the entire concept of our Bible, is to just be a good human. Don't steal, don't hurt, don't curse. Respect your parents, the elderly. That's how we grew up. That's our belief system. We've been nourished to love, not to hate. And this is why it's so difficult right now to have peace, because how you can communicate with people that only see blood in their eyes and hate.
Very frightening.
And for me to hear, you know, from my parents in Israel that Jewish people abroad are taking their mezuzahs from their door because they're afraid to be marked. That's history coming back.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I was listening to a podcast the other day about what's happening, and somebody actually had to invent a little device that you put over the, I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the thing, you put on your door.
And it locked the door so they could not get in from the inside.
Right, but they even have to hide it or put it on the inside of the
house.
Exactly,
it's from the inside.
Because people are worried that they're going to have their homes will be broken into and terrible things will happen to them.
Right.
That's nuts.
I mean, that's nuts.
It's just so crazy.
What's nuts is that we still need to explain to the world why we defend ourselves, why we don't have the right to defend ourselves. I did not wake up suddenly and chose, with no reason, to go and kill and rape and do this and burn Jews. It was just, the stories are ridiculous. And also to prove the world with videos, proving the world with videos that's out there. And the world is still saying that they did not see proof and that it did not happen. Now, this is what's concerning to me.
So when you grew up in Israel, did people talk about Hamas as a, you know, a terrorist organization?
When I grew up in Israel, I was 16 years old and they were training me to hold a gun to protect myself. So if they spoke about Hamas, we don't speak about Hamas. We live Hamas. We live terror. It's not something we speak. It's something that's in the energy. It's out there. So it's always on the topic. Always don't be in crowded places. Don't go to festivals. You know, avoid this, avoid that. So this, we have like a manual of what not to do around Arabs.
So how does the whole population not have post-traumatic stress as a result of being on high alert all the time?
It's because this is our reality. And we are not a whining people. We thrived after the Holocaust and built such a magnificent, unbelievable, beautiful country because of our intellect, our talent. And we are so united that nothing will break us. Nothing will break us. No matter what you will throw at us, we will win and we will be strong. It's one heart that beating. So when people ask me, how am I? I am horrible. I feel bad. I feel angry. What is this question even? How would you feel if your parents will be raped and killed in front of your eyes and they will pull their eyes out in front of your eye, on your, of your eyes? Or if a pregnant woman, the baby will be curved out of her alive. How would you feel? Are you okay? No, I'm not okay, world. I'm not okay.
Right.
Yeah. And I think what's even scarier is, for, at least from my perception, I think the world was more unified before, you know, October 7th with Hamas is a terrorist organization, right? Right. That was the standing with the State Department of the United States government. There wasn't like there was pro Hamas rallies,
right,
you know, before there was a terrorism attack. And all of a sudden terrorists perform a terrorism attack. And now people are advocating for them as, you know, the appropriate governing body and the solution to what's happening in Gaza. And that's what's baffling to me, is all the atrocities they committed. And it feels like, you know, that narrative should have been helping to support Israel and helping to have people's eyes opened up to the atrocities of this organization. And it's really done the opposite.
And look at the difference. This fight and this war is still continuing because we want our kidnapped back home. We want our people back. We don't send them to die. We want them back. We fight for the people. We want them back. I don't send my people to shield me so I could keep doing terror attack. That's them different in the mindset. A soldier is in front of a baby, not behind of a baby.
Right.
That's the difference. And that's what the fact that I need to explain it to people around me is just so, I'm just so angry about it, you know?
Well, I think that most people do not want to believe that what happened is real. I mean, I specialize in helping people overcome really horrible trauma, sexual trauma, emotional, physical, all of that sort of thing. And when people talk about sexual trauma as an example, nobody wants to believe that it's real. They don't want to believe that these kind of things can happen to children. So, you know, what's happening in Israel is, it's, I mean, not that there's any, you know, scale of trauma, but what's happened there is so far beyond anything that people could even imagine. They don't want to believe that human beings could act that way.
This is a different level now, because this time they kidnapped babies.
Right.
Yeah, but I think there's some people who are, there's a small sect of people that are denying the terrorist attack, right? Then there's a much larger group, from my perception, that acknowledges what happened, but thinks it's justified.
And they're happy about it.
Right.
Okay. So help me, you guys, help me understand. People keep saying to me that the Palestinian people are not Hamas, that they're separate. And I have a little trouble with that idea. I know I'm a really biased person, obviously, because I'm Jewish, but they elected Hamas as their governing body. Now, I understand that that happened, 15, 18 years ago or whatever, but why are they not doing everything they can to release the hostages and to, you know, try to get this stuff over as quickly as possible?
I want to say something.
Please.
All of the Palestinians, all of them, all of their babies, they have a book in school of how to hurt and kill the Jews. So this is something that's been rooted from day one. That's the belief system in a child from in school.
So that's what they teach in their public school system.
Public school systems. That's what they do. And we have the books. We have everything. Hamas is paying some of them a lot of money to hide their missiles in their house or in hospital. And if they don't agree, they have a bullet between the eyebrows.
Right. That's the thing, is that Hamas is, it's the government, right? So I don't say Hamas equals all Palestinians, right? That's not true.
Okay.
And I'm not a Trumper.
Yeah. And you can see on social media and from plenty of other interviews that there's plenty of Palestinians that are against Hamas.
Right.
Okay.
But afraid to talk.
Or have no power to do anything about it. It's an authoritarian regime.
Right, right.
Who canceled elections.
Well, yeah, and if you fight the government in a dictatorship, you don't last long.
No.
So I understand the fear of going up against a government because, I mean,
you
look what's happening.
Win.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy to me, is there's all these Americans protesting in support of Hamas, thinking that they're helping the Palestinian people, and then there's the Palestinian people themselves who live in Gaza that are asking for a new government.
Oh, okay. So why do you think people can't understand all of this? Is it that they don't care, or they're too ignorant, or
I think because there's no solution. That's the problem, okay. Right? Yeah. There's no way to satisfy all sides, because especially the leadership of the Palestinian people right now in Gaza is Hamas, and their stated goal is to destroy the state of Israel. And this chant from the river to the sea, they want to take over all of the land for themselves.
I want to add to that, this is not just the Jews. Hamas want to kill and eliminate the Christians, everybody. They want the Muslims to own the world. That's their mission. It starts with the Jews.
Right.
But it's not just us. That's what they want. They want the world to be Muslim. They want the world to bow to Allah.
So what do they do with the Christian Palestinians? Because there's a fair number of Palestinian people that are not Muslims, right?
That I don't know. I don't know to answer that.
Oh, okay. I'm curious about that because
I don't like Christian, that I know for sure.
I have a dear friend who's Lebanese, but he's Christian, and he told me that he part of why his whole family left Lebanon, because he didn't feel safe being a Christian person there anymore.
They hate everybody that is not Muslim.
Okay. Yeah.
That's their mission. Well, and I think going back to your question about why people aren't understanding this, I mean, basically, right, what is the outcome? How does this end? And right. we don't know. Speaking from my own experience, who literally knew nothing about any of this before all of this started at the Gaza Strip, I'm like, is that near Las Vegas? I mean, I'm joking, but I think my silly opinion on a minute part of this is I feel like Israel is losing a PR campaign.
Yeah, totally.
And I feel like, I've gone on social media and I look at both sides. I look at like what the Palestinians saying, what the independent journalists are saying. And then I go on, the state of Israel, and I go on like the rabbis in Los Angeles and what they're preaching. And I just, unfortunately, there's so much coming out on the Palestinian side of all these horrific images, over and over and over. And for the Hamas, like there isn't anything, because they just literally took these poor people from the festival and kidnapped them. And those are the only images that you see. So we've just been obliterated with all these images of all these people dying. And it's like normal people that don't know anything, like myself, who have had to get educated pretty quickly. Number one, people want to just believe what they believe, and then they latch onto that and they don't go and look at the other side. Like you always follow what you think you need to follow. Most people don't look at the other side. And it's just a never ending story of that. And then the second side is, this is sort of a humanitarian issue also. So I also wasn't raised Jewish, and I completely understand, being Jewish, why someone is so passionate, why people are so like, I'm going to fucking fight until the death, until my country, my state is saved, my religion is saved, my people are saved. So you get that. But if I don't have that personal experience, I can't understand it until I've educated myself by reading and listening and talking. So I think that's also part of the problem. So many of us are just not that involved and don't know enough. And the last, we studied the Holocaust. That's all we kind of know. Like one's really.
Were you involved in the 9/11?
Was I involved in it?
Like, were you involved in social media?
No, that's social media wasn't around.
In 9/11?
It wasn't around.
Even the news. Were you?
No, I mean,
it was okay for your country to respond and fight back, right?
Was it? Yes. And I'm not saying it's not okay for your country. I believe 100% the mindset of why this is happening.
No, but
my point is just like, I think part of the problem is the people are seeing so much on the Palestinian side and not enough on the Jew side, because there's nothing to show.
There is ton to show, and we show it. The world chooses to ignore it. That's the difference. We show it.
Well, I've never actually been interested until now, I guess.
Yeah, but I think the other big issue is, there is a humanitarian crisis in Gaza, right?
Right.
You can't argue with that. But there's a lot of key points that the people who are advocating for the destruction of Israel and supporting Hamas don't point out.
So one of them
is, first of all, there's a lot of refugees who are on the border of Egypt. Egypt doesn't want to let them
in.
There's over 40 Muslim countries in the world. Not one of them wants to accept any Palestinian refugees to their country.
Why?
Because they know that they bring terror, yeah, they are cancer.
Exactly, because they themselves know there's no way to differentiate between the civilian Gazans who may have good ethics and the ones who are totally indoctrinated in hate and terrorism. And it's part of the government that caused that, Hamas, because all they do is they preach terror, they teach the kids to hate Jews, and it's been going on for over a dozen years now, so now people are brainwashed there.
So they don't want to destabilize their own country by bringing in Palestinians.
Instead of pointing the finger at the other Arab countries or the government of Hamas for indoctrinating people that way, they point the finger at Israel.
So this is the same thing that happens in Jordan also, right? It's not just Egypt.
Yeah,
Jordan,
they don't want to accept them.
Yeah, Lebanon,
no one wants to accept the refugees. That's the problem, is no one, Israel is the one actually trying to give them a place where they can prosper, right? And instead, we have an authoritative government that is brainwashing their people into hatred.
Okay, and you said there were other points also.
And also all the aid, of course. Like there's been, I think it was over $40 billion have been given to, you know, the Gaza Strip of aid, right?
And what happened to the money?
It went to weapons, right?
It was meant to build tunnels underground so they could kill Jews.
It's gone to building tunnels and executing Hamas's vision, which is to destroy Israel. That's their role. Their stated goal is to destroy the state of Israel. And people give aid, you know, thinking that they're trying to help the people, and it's a good thought. But at the end of the day, there's too much corruption. The government needs to go, because they don't use the aid to help the people. They use the aid to attack others and fuel hatred.
Wow. And I don't think anybody knows this, really. Like you said, do you think the average person knows anything about any of this?
No, I mean,
yeah. And the Hamas leadership, they're billionaires. The top three people in Hamas, they're all billionaires because they've siphoned aid for themselves. Right. They don't have businesses that generated this wealth. No, it's from aid.
He's hiding in the Four Seasons in
Qatar.
In Qatar, the leader of the Hamas.
Oh, okay.
With his billions while his people are dying. They refuse fuel to the hospital today or yesterday from Israel. This is the most humanitarian army in the world. And they refuse that because they want to keep sending bombs from the hospital. From the hospital.
Right.
If we will attack hospital to stop the attack, of course you attack in hospital. Of course we will look bad.
Right. The headline should be Hamas fires weapons from schools and hospitals and uses civilians as shields.
Right.
And it's not. That's not the narrative.
And the headline is that there is still 250 kidnapped in their hands. We don't have anyone from them.
And how do they even know those people are alive?
We don't. We want to believe that they are.
Okay.
I read something that there are 300 miles of tunnels. I mean, that's not even that big of an area, the Gaza Strip. That's 25 miles or something?
Yeah.
300 miles? Like, I mean, what is
it? Let's hear to San Francisco.
Just to add one more thing.
Yeah.
We gave them Gaza. The Israel gave them Gaza so they could live in peace and build their country. We opened graves and took the Israelis out of them by force to give them Gaza. While we were focusing to create a beautiful country, what did the Arab contribute to the world except of hate and terror? That's the question.
So I have a question for both you guys, because people have asked me over the years, I've asked people this question, like, why do people hate Jews so much? Like, it's like maybe 20 million Jews left in the world at the most.
Yeah, I think honestly, like even what's going on in America today, right, with everyone protesting, right, I think there's a lot of just general anger amongst the population. You know, it's always a thing of, you know, the successful people, the rich people, they have the control, they have the power, and we're disenfranchised and we're the minorities and we need to, you know, revolt for more, you know, equal footing, right? But without an understanding of what are the values behind what they're revolting for, you know, what is really going on behind the cause, it's just a way for them to vent their anger, you know, that they're not more progressed in life. And instead of focusing on doing productive things for society, building an economy, making their own way, they're focused on, you know, hatred.
Destroying.
So when you were going through public school as a kid, I can't imagine that you were indoctrinated into hating Muslims.
No, we actually try to befriend with them. You know, we try to get close to them and make peace through the young generation.
And it's important to say there are over 2 million Arabs that live in Israel.
Okay. There is amazing Israeli Arabs that we love, like the Druze, they are a brother, they're fighting for us in the army, they're protecting us, they're helping. There is peace inside of Israel, and any Israeli Arab that you will speak with will tell you also how much they appreciate Israel, how much they're lucky to be in such a free country that gives them education, support, home, love, everything they want. Be free, expose your hair, put makeup, feel your femininity, be a woman, speak out. Only in Israel, only in Israel.
So part of your education was to try to be open-minded.
My education was love. Yeah. My education was peace. My education was how can we make good to the world? How can we be good and better? But always, as I said, with my hand on my heart to check the heartbeat and to make sure that never again will never happen again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Always.
Right.
So I'm driving front, but in my head, I'm always thinking about the past. I'm living the past.
So when did your family emigrate to Israel? Do you know? Was it in the beginning?
I don't really remember the exact year. But they moved to Israel. They got kicked out of Spain. I'm a Sephardic, Moroccan Sephardic.
Okay.
And they moved when they just created Israel.
So they came from Spain or other from parts Spain, of the that part of Europe?
Morocco and Spain.
Okay. And do you know why they came to Israel?
To build the Jewish country.
Well, they were forced out of their...
They were forced, but the mission was to build the Jewish country.
Right.
That's all we want.
Yeah.
And we got the smallest piece in the planet of land.
Oh, I realize that.
Right? But still somehow we're the center of attention of the entire world.
Well,
but
that's what I'm trying to figure out. If there are 2.5 billion Muslims in the world and 20 million Jews, like a little tiny drop.
Yeah. We're the chosen one. We're blessed. Nobel Prizes, we created cure for cancer. We just do good to the world. We're not waking up one day and pressing the red button and sending bombs to people. Every day there is over 200 or 400 missiles that they shoot towards Israel. And even that, if the Israelis wouldn't create the Iron Dome because of their mega brains, we will be already wiped out.
Okay.
And gone. Years ago. Because every day we have missiles falling on us.
So that was even before this
conflict?
That's
not new. Yeah. It's like not new news. Base? That's always, always like that.
Every day?
Every day there
is
missiles.
That's the PR problem.
Right. Because the missiles get defeated by missile defense and they don't kill people. There's no attention to it in the media. But yes, even before this crisis, there's always like, you know, some guy that's shooting a rocket. You know, it's not necessarily a coordinated effort. It's, you know, lone actors. Maybe there's some coordination, you know, leading up to this horrific
event.
How many
soldiers they kidnapped from us.
But it's quite common to see missiles and seeing them explode in the sky when you're in Israel.
Wow.
So this is a weird question, but if you guys were in charge, what would you do?
I already know the answer to that.
What's that?
I already know the answer to that. Well,
there are two separate men here.
I will tell you first thing what I will do. I will ignore the world opinions.
Okay.
Because before you criticize me, why don't you talk to Putin and how many people he's killing daily?
Right.
Where are you?
Nobody cares
in the
about
war
that.
Of Ukraine. Right. Why are you not there? Right?
Yeah.
Where are you with China and all the crimes that they're doing? Where are you with Iran and what they're doing? Killing their own people on a daily basis, hundreds and hundreds, hanging gays because they're gays. Like, where are you, world, with all the pain that's already exists outside of Israel, outside of Israel.
Right.
That's the first thing I will do. I will ignore the world opinion and I will protect my family. Like each one of you listeners at home will protect your family no matter what and who is in front of you and what's his opinion.
So after Hamas came into Israel and killed all of those people, the response has been...
Killed is a nice word. They did more than killing.
No, I mean, I know that. I'm just saying that the response has been, the usual response is, don't mess with Israel.
Right.
We will not... We open the gates of hell on them right now.
Right.
And the response is finally a response. So we will not stop. There will not be a ceasefire until we get the kidnapped back. America do not negotiate with terrorists. We do not negotiate with terrorists and we do not negotiate with the world that support terrorists because they want us to have a cup of tea and negotiate peace with Arabs. Little they know that we're talking with animals. If you have the ability to carve a baby out of a woman or to put a baby in the oven, and I repeat, put a baby in the oven, and I will repeat again, they put a baby in the oven. This is not people you negotiate with.
Right.
And their stated goal is to destroy Israel. So there's no negotiation. That's the problem. The government needs to go.
Okay.
I think the current strategy that's being done by Israel is the right strategy. They're defending themselves and they're trying to eliminate the terrorist regime to free the people of Gaza.
Okay. So how come Netanyahu has such a bad reputation even before all of this happened?
Because we're more powerful. We have more weapon. We are smart. We have technology. We create relationships with other countries. We sell them technology. We are the chosen one. Yes, and I'm not afraid to say it. We are the chosen one.
So what does that mean? I mean, I remember as a kid growing up and going to Hebrew school and all of that and being told, you know, that the Jews are the chosen people, but nobody ever explained to me what that meant. I have no idea what that means.
I don't think there is an explanation for it. There is a feeling to it.
A feeling?
A feeling.
Well, I know that my father had that feeling.
It's like how I told you when I was dancing in Europe, and for me to be a soloist in the biggest companies, and when I needed to go on stage, all the dancers need to clean the stage for me. That's a chosen one for you.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think really, it's from my perspective, it's because Judaism was really the foundation of all, many religions in the world, you know, Muslim and Christianity,
the capital,
right?
Of the
They're race. All evolutions beyond, right? It's a fork in the road. Everyone started Jewish and then, oh, Christians also believed in Jesus. And then, oh, Muslims also believed
Jesus
in Muhammad.
Jesus was a rabbi.
Right? But I think there's a common starting point, which is Judaism.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Well, and I remember growing up that I was always puzzled why every Jewish holiday, with the exception of maybe the celebration of the harvest, was all about getting away from some, like, slavery of some kind or
right.
another. And I was always stunned. Why does every holiday that we celebrate have to do with running away from people that tried to kill us?
Right.
It's nuts. And then I remember reading about the plague in Europe and that the Inquisition in Spain started because they blamed the Jews for the plague.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just figured, let's get rid of all the Jews and then the plague will go away. And I think, well, why does this keep happening over history, over and over and
well,
over
the Holocaust
again?
Started because they feared from the success of the Jews. They saw that they really dominating almost every industry.
Well, but in this day and age, and I could be completely wrong about this, but in the Holocaust, I mean, what percentage of Jewish people in the world died?
I don't know, 6 million.
I think it was around like 80%.
Okay. So the only Jewish people in my mind that are left are either super lucky or extremely capable.
Right.
Because through natural selection, which is a horrible thing to say, most of the population of the Jews in the world have died.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So of course it's going to be an overrepresentation of people that... are going to do better than most because that's the only people that are left.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the right way to look at it, but that's the way I've always sort of considered it, that if the only Jewish people that are left are lucky or really smart or both, right?
Both.
So, of course, it's going to create a distortion in the population.
Mm-hmm.
But that's relatively recent.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been something throughout history, right, that people want more of the same around them and they don't want to accept others. I don't know if it's something innate in human beings that we don't want to accept people who are different than us. But even like, yeah, Christianity and the Crusades, right? Like they wanted to convert everyone into Christianity. That was how, you know, what happened when America was colonized. You know, they wanted to convert the Native American people into Christians.
Right.
Right. So it's now we're in a phase where the Muslim people are in that, you know, trajectory of their, you know, history and what's going forward. And that's their objective, is to convert everyone to Muslim or kill people who are not.
Oh,
you know, and I don't know why, to be honest, because from my perspective as a person, I want to be accepting of everyone. I want everyone to be happy and live in peace. And I'm not trying to make everyone the same. I'm not trying to have a mission to make everyone Jewish, right? And convert everyone to Judaism. You can, you know, do whatever religion you want. And I'm fine with that. And
as long as you don't hurt or kill anyone else.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be Jewish.
But I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know why there was this history of like a passion of we need to make everyone the same as us.
Yeah.
And I think that was, you know, Hitler. We have to have only, you know, white, blue eyed, you know, blonde people. And that's the, you know, the what we want to continue in the bloodline. I don't know why. You know, I can't explain it. But it's been something that's in humans. So maybe it's something in our genetics.
Right.
What is your answer to it?
I'm sorry.
What is your answer to this question?
You know, I'm not really sure, because I know this is a terrible way to put it, but I don't look typically Jewish because I have blonde hair and blue eyes, right? Yeah. So even though I have a very Jewish last name, in this room, over the course of time, at least five or six people have said really horribly anti-Semitic things. And I see really lovely people. I mean, I don't see the run-of-the-mill type of person in my practice. Most of the people I so you're extremely capable, really smart, really fun. But for some reason, they didn't recognize my last name as being Jewish. So they said things, and I look at them, I think, you didn't really just say that out loud, did you? I didn't say that to them out loud, but I just thought, this is so endemic to our culture. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And I haven't really experienced very much anti-Semitism. I grew up, my parents were really careful about where we lived. And they only were willing to live in neighborhoods with a ton of Jewish people because of their horrible experiences as children. So I was sort of sheltered, I guess, in a way like you described, with, you know, everybody around me, every Jewish holiday, the schools are empty. There were like three people that showed up for school. And that's not normal in the United States, but it certainly was where I grew up. But when I was 18, my family decided to go back to Toronto to show us where we were born. And we arrived at the airport. My uncle picked us up. And on the way to his house, a car pulled in front of us, and a bunch of guys got out of the car with baseball bats and started screaming the most incredibly anti-Semitic, frightening things I have ever heard. And I'm sitting there looking around thinking, what the fuck? I just landed on another planet here.
How did they even know who you are?
I don't know. It's not like, you know, my... uncle had a Jewish star on the front of his, you know.
Didn't you say you guys were in a Cadillac or something?
It was a Cadillac, and I joked around that maybe, you know, it was because of the right. But I, you know, all I knew is that was my first introduction to how crazy people are.
Yeah.
When it comes to anti-Semitism, luckily my uncle was a good driver, so he got us away, and none of us got hurt. But man, was I happy I didn't grow up there. That would have been horrible.
Yeah.
And that was just Toronto's a major metropolitan city in the world. People talk about how much they love it all the time. Now, granted, this was 40 years ago. Maybe it's different now. I don't know. But
I feel like to do crimes toward Jews is forgiven. It's okay.
It's what?
It feels like it's okay to do crimes and like to hurt Jews.
That people feel like it's okay to
do that? Yeah, like it's okay. Nothing will happen to me if I will kill a Jewish. You know what I mean?
You think
I feel it.
It's terrible.
Well, and I think there's a lot of jealousy.
Tons of jealousy.
I really believe that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that necessarily, I mean, again, I would love it if we were all sort of on the same equal footing, because, you know, if we could all sort of get along with each other and respect each other, that'd be really nice. But that's not the way the world works, obviously. I mean, my dad came from the worst poverty you could imagine. And he became a really successful guy in the United States. So he thought the United States was the best country in the world as far as, you know, being able to make a living and find a life and have a safe place for your family to grow up and all of that. And he could never understand why other minorities didn't sort of feel the same way. Now, he was a white guy, so that I don't think he really understood that part of things. But I heard almost every day of my life about a really famous, really successful Jewish person, because my dad was obsessed with successful Jewish people. And he would tell me all the time, well, this person, you know, and all that sort of thing. The biggest problem I had is I was forced to go to Hebrew school against my will. And I was rather been surfing or playing baseball. Mm-hmm. So I can't, the religious part of it got lost on me because of the, I was made to feel so guilty about wanting to have fun instead of going to school after school. But, you know, that's a relatively minor inconvenience. But I did get a, I had a really funny experience at my bar mitzvah when I was getting ready to go and read from the Torah. The rabbi came and opened up the, I don't know what it's called, but where the Torah lives inside this. Mm-hmm. He opens it up and he lifts up the Torah and he pulls it and it got stuck and he banged it right into my head. And everybody saw me get banged in the head by the Torah and everybody just started laughing. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, I think I just got the message.
Yeah.
Anyway, I know I'm off topic here. I want to know more about what you guys, what do you guys think moving forward? What, yeah. You know?
So I have one big kind of viewpoint about what's going on and why.
Please.
So to me, I almost sympathize with some of the people who are anti-Israel because they're not educated, right? Okay. In today's day and age, it's such a, you know, 15 seconds video is all the attention span people have to watch.
Right.
And there's so much propaganda being published by Hamas and their real supporters. There are people who really believe in the principles that Hamas does. And then there's a lot of people who don't even know what the principles of Hamas are, but they watch some 15-second video of, you know, people suffering in Gaza, and then all of a sudden they're taking that side without really understanding what's happening.
Right.
So for me, I really feel like what's happening in the world right now and why there's so much more anti-Semitism is because, first of all, people don't even know what anti-Semitism is.
Okay.
And second of all, it's because of their attention spans and what has happened with our society and social media and how prevalent it is and how that's the source of information now. And it's very easy for people to get caught up in a 15-second video without having the context behind it.
And this is the first time, really,
right,
that there's been some sort of war like this where it's all focused on social media.
Right, and it is. It's a propaganda war. And the issue is there are so many more Muslims in the world that support Hamas than there are Jewish people that we're just outnumbered. Yeah. You know, we're doing our best to spread honest words of what's happening in the world, and we just don't have the same volume and platforms that all these other people do. And so people see, you know, what the mass social media messages are, and they follow suit. You know, people have, there's an internal anger, and they want to just jump on board and support whatever cause they see. And it's a 15-second video, and to them that 15 seconds makes sense. I'm going to support that. And then they start marching in support of Hamas. And there was actually a really interesting video that I saw on social media, and it was someone walking around, you know, asking people, do you want to sign this petition in support of Hamas? And then it was in New York City, and they had like 10 people, and every single one of them said yes. And then they said, I'd like to read you the terms and conditions of what you're agreeing to. And it was like, do you agree that you want to destroy the entire state of Israel? And then once they started listing all of the principles, they basically had a list of all the principles in the Hamas charter, then everyone said no. So the fact that all these people, just because of some 10-second video they saw, said they wanted to support Hamas without actually understanding what Hamas stands for.
Right.
So that's the problem. And people just have this anger. They want to express it, and they jump on a bandwagon without understanding what they're supporting.
That's a really good point. I wish there was a solution to that point. I guess education
would help.
It's
education, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's not enough focus on education in educational institutions. There's more focus on free speech.
Right.
And hate speech and what's going on, you know, all around all the college campuses is abhorrent. You know, I'm keep reading things about Jewish students who feel uncomfortable, you know, to walk on campus, right, to wear Jewish stars around their neck.
Well, there was some idiot that wanted to shoot up a dining hall at Rutgers or something.
At Cornell, that's where
my alma mater
is where there was a major incident and someone got arrested by the FBI, and he was a student.
Right.
It wasn't even some lone actor pretending to be a student. It was a real student who had this ideology. And people feel uncomfortable, and the administration doesn't do enough to clamp down on hate speech. You know, they should know better. They're supposedly educated.
Right.
They should understand the full history and the context of what, you know, these chants mean and how they're anti-Semitic and how they're intimidating Jewish students on campus.
Right.
And instead they put this into a free speech bucket, and it's horrible.
And the funny thing is that in every university and in every campus, there is 4 or 3 buildings that been donated by Jews.
Right.
With their biggest Jewish name in the front of the building, uh-huh. Right? So where is the media? Hollywood. Hollywood created by the Jews. Why there is silence from Hollywood? Instagram, Mark Zuckerberg, he's Jew.
Uh-huh.
Why you don't do something? The Arabs' money goes very, very long. And when there is money involved, people will sell their soul for it.
Right.
And that's what's happening. We have few friends that their job is to help Arab students to get into universities. Do you know how much money they get out of these Arab people? Millions of dollars just to put their kids in America University.
Oh, okay.
So this is like layer over layer over layer over layer over layer. It all ends up with the terror's money that feed the hate in the world.
Right. So is your family living in fear right now, or are they relatively okay?
We do not live in fear. We just worried and we're sad. But we are strong. We believe in our army. We believe in our technology. We believe in our unity as country, in our people. So no, they actually have revenge in them. They have anger. They want to respond. They want to answer back. They want to protect. So we never ever feel we've been in this defensive mode or like the victim mode. We've never did that.
No.
Okay.
For good reason.
So they're afraid for me that I'm actually not in Israel. And they're telling me because me.
Yeah, it's worse here. That's what we hear from people in Israel, is that they feel safer in the country.
Right.
Even though there's a war going
on.
Because it's a unified people, right? The people of Israel right now are very unified, whether they're Muslims, Jewish, whatnot. Everyone in the country is very unified, and they don't have the hatred inside the country compared to what we're seeing here in America, where there's so much hatred inside our own country.
Right. Well, and, you know, again, I can't excuse Trump for encouraging everybody to hate people that don't agree with you, but that wasn't a part of the United States that I lived in until he became president
and decided social media.
The best way to solve the problem is just to destroy the people that don't agree with you.
Right.
Right. And again, it's this very polarized political situation. It's another contribution, right? If Republicans support a certain cause, well, that means the Democrats have to support the opposite, right? Yeah. And it's not all Democrats, of course. I'm really centered. Yeah. I've been Democrat in my life before, you know.
Sure.
But I'm saying, the very far fringes of each party are dangerous.
But
people are very easily to just say, because this person says this, I do the opposite, without understanding again. So there's really just lack of education amongst people to understand what's happening.
Right.
But also, like, you don't punish them, you know what I mean? You let them do whatever they want here, and there is no punishment, there is no consequences. Like, what if an immigrant, an Arab immigrant, go and got these entire options to be in America, the land of the dream, right? And he goes now to the street and do whatever he's doing and hurting people. They should take his paper and they should kick him out of America today, yesterday. You know, that's a solution.
Right.
How you do it.
Have you guys even remotely considered moving back to Israel? Well, I know that you're
beg my husband, Ben, that I love so much, to bring all of his brain and knowledge in his industry, in missile and defense. Actually, Ben built part of the Iron Dome.
Oh, okay.
So I want him to go back to Israel and help as much as he can, even if it's from America or from Israel. I will do anything for my country. I am a country. I am Israel. I am nothing without Israel. I could never walk here freely with all this confidence without Israel.
Right.
Knowing that I have my country, I know where my home is. America is my home too, but Israel is my heart. It's where my roots are.
Right.
And I think that's the difference. I think someone who is not Jewish doesn't understand that until they hear it from you. Like, and so you understand why Israel is having the reaction that they're having. We don't have what you have. And it's, I mean, it's a beautiful thing. But I think it's why we're just like, what should I watch? What should I believe? What's happening to these babies? These people are kidnapped. Like, so there's just so much confusion and so uneducation out there. But you are so passionate about where you're from. I mean, both of you, that I don't feel like the rest of us have that. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. But I think it's also important. Like, for example, I'm not into social media. I never post anything. I'm not doing anything until what has happened recently where I feel like I need to advocate and have a voice because there's not enough voices saying ethical and moral things, you know? And I think the question of like, would you go back to Israel? Like, yes, we would. But at the same time, like, I think there needs to be voices here in America that are standing strong. And that's why, you know, some people are reacting to the anti-Semitism by saying, I want to take my mezuzah down. I'm not going to wear my Jewish star. You know, to me, I think that's almost the wrong direction. I think we need to stand strong and show that we're proud and we're Jewish and we're, you know, moral people and make sure that's the message that's going out in the world, not that we're running away and giving in to these people.
Right. It's just that the level of the violence that they bring even to America is shocking. So people don't know how to react. They don't know how to respond to this violence.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not accustomed to it. Us, the Israeli, we know what to expect because we grew up with them. We're surrounded with enemies. So here in America, you don't know how to react. So you want to take the mezuzah because you don't feel like the government or the police or people will actually protect you.
Yeah.
Right. So we're just about out of time, you guys. I would love for all three of you to make a final statement about what, you know, just to kind of wrap things up a bit. Anybody want to go first?
I'll start. I think if there's any silver lining in all of this, I just think that we all need to be more educated and understanding about it on both sides. It's so easy to just grasp on to one thing. And like I said, for me, the past month has been a huge learning experience. And I find myself, you know, I'm pretty educated that I know that there are so many people out there that are just not taking the time to really do it. But if you're going to go down the social media rabbit hole, if you're going to do whatever, look at both sides, listen to really smart people talking about this stuff or podcasts or books and understand what's really happening before you can make a judgment. Because the thing that was supposed to unite us all, social media, is doing the opposite. We all know that. And it's I don't know how this is all going to end. It's really sad. I think there's going to be repercussions for generations, but the only silver lining that I can say is just educate yourself on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think education is the message that I want to get out there is, you know, be educated. Don't just watch a 15 second video and then make your mind up, right? You need to do reading, do research. And I think maybe the government and a lot of the university institutions out there, they have an obligation to help, you know, disseminate that education and make sure that there's an unbiased and factual approach to understanding the situation. And I think that will go a long way from my perspective.
Okay.
So thank you, first of all, for inviting us and for letting us speak for the favor of Israel and really share the right message. You all said such a beautiful thing. And my message comes from my people, my brothers, my sisters, all of them. I want to say one thing to all of the haters in the world, and I don't care how it will sound. Fuck you all. We will win. Am Israel Chai. The light will shine, and we will win. That's all.
Very well said.
Thank you.
You know, I can't even tell you guys how much I appreciate you coming on my show. I just think this is so, so important. So thank you all.
Yeah,
thank you. Thank you so much.
We appreciate our listeners and are interested in your comments and suggestions. Feel free to email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor for this podcast, please email us at fearmeoutpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. See you next time.